This is NPR News, News and Notes. I'm Ed Gordon. On today's roundtable, gubernatorial candidate and former NFL great Lynn Swann catching political barbs, and is Iraq too dangerous for the press? Joining us today to discuss these topics and more from our NPR headquarters in Washington, D.C., Republican strategist Tara Setmeyer. From member station WRNI in Providence, Rhode Island, Glenn Lowry, professor of the social sciences and professor of economics at Brown University, and George Curry, editor-in-chief of the National Newspaper Publishers Association News Service, joins us from Laurel, Maryland. All right, folks, so much to talk about today. One of the things that we want to get into is a discussion about whether or not Iraq has become too dangerous for correspondents. George Curry, let me start with you since you are the journalist of this group. We heard yesterday that ABC News anchor Bob Woodruff and his cameraman were seriously injured in a roadside bombing. We have been following the story of Jill Carroll, the freelance reporter from the Christian Science Monitor, who has been kidnapped, held hostage. We don't know her fate as yet. War correspondents have always been a brave bunch, but now we're seeing so many more correspondents covering war and so many more in peril. Has it become a point where you're going to have to take a real hard look at how you cover war, George?
You always take a look and review how you do it, but the fact is you got to do it. Even though I think the latest count, about 79 journalists and assistants have been killed since the United States invaded Iraq in March of 73. And this is, of course, a high-profile case. I mean, Woodward is an anchor for World News Tonight. If you're a journalist, though, and they've covered war before, you got to cover it. Now, my question is, why were they being an eight vehicle convoy and being the first unit and be standing up? I mean, I think more precautions could have been taken. And if I'm in any unit, I'm sure you don't want to be in the first vehicle, considering all the road bombs and everything else. And so, you know, I'm sure they have their reasons, but that's a question that comes to my mind. But you can't back away. You got to cover the story.
We should note that they were embedded with the 4th Infantry Division, and that Woodruff decided that he wanted to go in the vehicle. It was not actually a U.S. military vehicle that they were traveling in. He said he wanted to be able to bring the account from the side of the Iraqi troops who are, in fact, fighting it. Glenn Lowry, let me ask you, as relates to the question of whether or not we are seeing a difference, though, quite frankly, in the way wars are fought from the side of the, quote, enemy. It used to be that often journalists were seen as kind of the middle ground and were given some leeway by both sides. You don't often see that as much.
Yeah, that seems to be the case, unfortunately. I'm not up on the statistics, but it would appear that this is, for journalists, the bloodiest of our wars. The nature of the conflict certainly militates in favor of that. That is to say, the kidnappings, the attacks on civilians, the suicide bombings, the fact that the road to the airport can be a very dangerous place and so on. It's not as if there was a clear front line of battle that the journalists could know that they were at or avoid. I just want to add one thing, though, and with my heart going out to these people who have been injured and their families and praying for their rapid recovery, I want to observe that, you know, there's not a lot of shared sacrifice in this war. And one of the reasons why an event like this, given the prominence of the people involved and so forth, strikes us is that it makes us realize it's not just our soldiers who could get hurt over there. It just underscores for me the significance of recognizing that the country, not just the army, is at war. And I think we all probably ought to be thinking about the sacrifices that we're not making, that we might make on behalf of this effort, given that this is something that we're doing. It shouldn't just be our soldiers who bear the burden. And I say that, of course, with great sympathy and regret at what has happened to these journalists.
And Tara, the interesting point here, had it not been Bob Woodruff in such a high-profile position as the anchor of a network newscast, we would not have seen the kind of coverage that we've seen over the course of the last couple of days.
You're right about that, and I think that that's something that we should not lose sight of. You remember, our U.S. soldiers endure this type of fate and sacrifice every day, but because of the celebrity of the person injured, more attention is brought to it, and I hope that that doesn't diminish the sacrifice of our soldiers. But there's something else interesting about this debate that I listened to someone else, another journalist this morning, a female, who said she's questioned how responsible it was of someone like Bob Woodruff, who is a husband and a father for how responsible it was of him to take on, to volunteer for an assignment like this, knowing that he has a family back home and knowing the risks. It was just an interesting perspective on this. Is he putting ambition, his ambition, over his responsibility to his family, which is something to consider when you're putting yourself into harm's way?
Well, no, but I think the same can be said of a police officer. Yeah, I think the same could be said of a police officer or a fireman or anyone who puts himself in a dangerous situation, that you're putting ambition in front of your family is a bit much, particularly if you don't know the person. So,
well, not necessarily.
We'll note that that's... Pardon?
Tara, let me give another perspective on it.
Wait, hold on
a
second.
Another perspective on it.
Can I at least expand on why I mentioned
I just
that?
Heard
what the difference is.
Hang on, George. Hang on, George. Real quick, Tara.
The difference between a fireman or a police officer is that the wives marry these individuals knowing that they're going into professions that potentially put them in harm's way, whereas a journalist, I'm sure that his wife didn't know that she was going to be marrying someone who was going to be putting himself as a war correspondent in harm's way on a daily basis like that.
Well,
that's
again, Tara. But again, let's just be fair. We don't know what his wife
knew. No, that's
knew.
Not. That's true.
Nor,
it's just
nor
a different
do
perspective.
We know. Nor do we know. Hang on. Nor do we know whether or not they discussed the idea. As you climb up the ladder, you do know that these kinds of assignments may come. They may have had this discussion. George, real quick, and we'll move on to something else.
Let me address this from the position of a journalist. I've been a journalist for 35 years, and there's nothing I'd rather do. You do know there are dangers, and you don't have to be covering a war to know there are dangers. I've covered a lot of drug wars, particularly when I was in St. Louis with the St. Louis Post-Dispatch, and I was threatened. And this is but if you're a journalist at heart, this is what you want to do. And I've always said, I'm not saying it because I'm on the show, I've always said if I died while in the act of doing my journalistic duties, I can't think of a better way of going. So it is a devotion to your craft and what you do. And yes, there are risks, but someone has to take it. And when you vow to be a journalist, the ones I really, really know, then you accept the risk.
All right, let's turn our attention to something that has raised the eyebrows of some. Tara, I'll start with you here. As we many know, that former NFL great Lynn Swann, the great wide receiver of the Pittsburgh Steelers, is running for the gubernatorial seat of the Senate, or I should say of the state of Pennsylvania. He was recently called the, quote, rich white guy of this campaign by former Lieutenant Governor Bill Scranton's now former campaign manager, who took some barbs at Lynn Swann in suggesting that he was the insider and not the outsider here, as he's trying to portray himself. But again, the interesting point here is that the race card, ironically kind of transposed, if you will, was played here.
Yeah, that was a tasteless comment, and it's just the uglier side of primary races. I think oftentimes we don't pay as much attention to the local, state and local races, which can be pretty nasty. And I think it's unfortunate and in poor taste that a campaign manager, a seasoned one at that, would make such an off the cuff remark, not knowing the potential political consequences. He should have been fired. The other interesting thing is that he's trying to portray Lynn Swann as the insider because he is the establishment's pick for the gubernatorial candidate, which shows to me the 06 election is going to be that it looks as if that some of these local races, they're shying away from the national party. And that can be from the reverberations of the Abramoff scandal and the what the Democrats are calling the culture of corruption. So this may be an indicator of what the 06 elections are going to be like on a local level, shying away from the national party. But this is unacceptable. And for the race card to be thrown in this way, it's absolutely it's absurd, actually, considering that that his own candidate comes from a wealthy family. I mean, I really don't know what he was thinking about, but it's the uglier side of primary politics.
Glenn, do we make too much of this? Should we just rack this up to one of those times that you should have edited what you were thinking, and that maybe it was just an off-the-cuff remark that really had little to do with race and the idea of just trying to paint it as Tara suggested, as Lynn Swann being the political insider?
No. This is like the Freudian slip. You see what's really going on when somebody says something off the cuff like this. I mean, let's analyze the statement for a minute. What he's saying is, we got real rich white guys who get elected running on their own money to office all the time. Now, here we've got a black guy who's got the anointment of the establishment. There's something a little illegitimate or ironical about that. You know, if you that remark plays well on conservative talk radio, just doesn't play very well on NPR.
That I would disagree with that. A remark like that doesn't play well on conservative talk radio. That Lynn Swan is a rich white guy. That's supposed to be something that that conservatives can relate to, that they're in agreement with. As a conservative, I absolutely disagree that the majority, 99% of conservatives, are not going to agree with an insult like that.
Well, then why did Bill Bennett say that if you abort all black babies, you wouldn't have any crime? Why did Trent Lott say to a conservative audience that Strom Thurmond had some ideas right, and if we'd followed him, we wouldn't be in some of the troubles we are now? This is the
because
true
you have radical wings of
both
sides.
An important element of that party's constituency.
I've never supported either one of those comments, and you always have the extreme on both sides, and they're playing to the extreme sides. That does not represent the majority of conservatives in this country.
Let me surprise everybody by taking a different position. I am not. I think it was an inappropriate comment, but I don't read so much race offense in this. To me, it was a flippant comment, and actually, it was kind of funny comment. if you consider, first of all, that Lynn Swan does have a lot of money, and he probably lived a lifestyle of many affluent whites. But the irony of this campaign manager was he was representing the former lieutenant governor who's come from a very wealthy family. Mm-hmm. So I thought it was something probably said in the heat of the moment, and I didn't see this as an injection of race in any big issue. But I think it was an inappropriate comment.
Though what it does do is it really shows still today the idea of a candidate, particularly at the levels we're talking about here, really still is a rich white guy.
Precisely. And all this is a kind of superficial morality. I mean, if you take a map of the old states of the Confederacy, or if you take a map of the parts of our country where the resistance to the imposition of federal authority to enforce civil rights was greatest, and you overlay that with a map where the intensity of support for the Republican Party is greatest, you will get almost a perfect fit. There's a Confederate flag flying on top of the State House in South Carolina. I'm not making this up.
Yeah, but that's also, Democrats
saying,
in the South as well.
There's a racism that's implicit in the kind of delegitimation of liberalism that is the bread and butter of the Karl-Rovian Republican ideology. That's all I'm saying. There's a subtext of racism there, and every now and then it peeks its ugly head through.
Just as complicit.
All right, I got to get to this story before we run out of time, and that is a question of whether or not you agree with the school district of Los Angeles school officials there, or the sister of Nicole Brown Simpson. School district officials voted unanimously to rename Mount Vernon Middle School in Los Angeles after Johnny Cochran, the late famed attorney who represented O.J. Simpson. And Nicole Brown Simpson's sister, Denise Brown, who many people know has stood today as the bell ringer of the continued want to keep her memory alive, said, yeah, he was a great defense attorney, but what about your moral obligation to children and society? She feels that naming this school after Mr. Cochran was in bad taste. George Curry?
First of all, I refuse to let Johnny Cochran be defined simply by one case. This is a person with a long history of fighting police brutality, and for freeing Geronimo Pratt and working on a lot of cases that didn't have anywhere near the profile that O.J. had. And so to try to define him by one case is to miss the contribution of the man. I think he deserves more than one school named after him because he has been exemplary in terms of what he did as a lawyer. And even in the O.J. Simpson case, his responsibility was to represent his client. He did that well, but it's not the sum and substance of Johnny Cochran. Mm-hmm.
Glenn, and we should also note, Glenn, as you go on, that this may be a bit of the heart speaking rather than the head for Denise Brown.
Well, sure, and certainly you can understand that she might feel the way that she does, and I do understand that and respect that feeling. I would just say that again, you look at the subtext here. I mean, O.J. Simpson was also defended by Alan Dershowitz. I mean, Alan Dershowitz defended Klaus von Bülow. I mean, I'm not aware of some great campaign out there to try to say that Alan Dershowitz shouldn't be honored by the American Jewish Committee or whatever because it disrespects whatever. That these are lawyers doing their job. Johnny Cochran, by all accounts, was an honorable and non-corrupted and decent and effective man. It is too bad that Nicole Brown Simpson is dead and was murdered, and if O.J. Simpson got away with it, you might say that was an injustice. But why should that reflect negatively on Johnny Cochran? Because he's black?
Oh, I think that's absolutely the reason why. And I don't have a problem with them naming a middle school after him because, in fact, he was a brilliant lawyer, and more inner city minority kids need to look up to people who are successful legitimately, and he does, and this will bring to attention more of his accomplishments outside of the O.J. Simpson case, as tragic as it may have been for the Simpson family. But what that case did was bring into focus racial conflicts, and because he is the black lawyer that got the black superstar off for murdering his white wife is the only reason why we're having this discussion. And I think that's unfortunate. The professor made a good point about that, Alan. You wouldn't hear this discussion if it were Alan Dershowitz. So as much as we sympathize with the Brown family, there's I think that there's a greater accomplishments that Johnny Cochran has had over the course of his life that warrant a school being named after him.
All right. Well, that being said, I think we all agree with George Curry that it would be incorrect to try to define Johnny Cochran through only the O.J. Simpson prism, and that he was far more than just that case. And those of us who knew the man and know the history understand the importance of him and know that the reverberations of what he has done have been with us and will be with us for a long time. George Curry, Tara Settmeyer, and Glenn Lowry, thanks so much for joining us today. Greatly appreciate it.
Thank you, Ed.
Thank you.